Welcome, and thank you for joining us on The Breakthrough Factor, a podcast and YouTube show where your host, Jess Boss, interviews entrepreneurs, athletes, and financial professionals to find out what it takes to break through barriers to health, wealth, and taking ownership of your life. If you're feeling stuck in your career or seeking advice on how to overcome obstacles all the way to building your fitness and finances, this is a show for you.
And then the big, you know, one of my breakthrough moments at that one was, and you and I laughed about this and we talked, but I will literally never forget it, is two guys used to come in and work out at lunchtime. And what was noteworthy was, A, what do these guys do that they can come at lunch? Because nobody's at the gym. It's empty, right? Everybody else comes at 6 o'clock. It's busy. It sucks. These guys came at lunch. So, A, I want to do that. One guy worked in construction.
First thing you
want to do, right? Yep. He worked in construction. So we had like a lunch break. So I'm like, okay, I don't really want to do that because I did landscaping for a summer and I hated it.
Yeah.
But the other guy was a chiropractor and he had a Toyota Land Cruiser. And back then, the Land Cruiser was kind of like the Range Rover Sport of today. Like it was a baller car.
Yes, it was.
So I'm like, okay, this guy's got a badass truck and he comes at lunch and he seems to have, like he would always like pay for his stuff in cash. Like he seemed like he had like lots of 20s in his wallet, right? So I'm like, this is cool. I kind of like this idea. So they would just chat with me after their workouts every day. And again, I'm like 25. So maybe we're talking about if I'm dating somebody in the gym or what's going on or when's my bodybuilding contest, like just small talk. Yeah. And one day the guy named Chris was the construction guy, really cool. He said to me, hey bro, I got to ask you a question. Like, yeah, what's up? And literally it's usually like, what can I do for my abs? Or I'm starting to get you. I'm like, yeah, what's up? He goes, what the fuck are you still doing here? And I was like, excuse me? He goes, what are you doing still working here? And I was like, I don't understand the question. And he's like, listen, man, I'm watching you for a while now. And he's like, you're really good at this stuff. I watch you with the clients. I watch you with the members. But like, you got to get out of here. You're not going to make anything of that skill set in this little shitty gym in New Jersey. I have a friend who coaches people, who trains people in New York City. He drives a Corvette and he makes $100,000. Like, get in there. And it was just so funny to me that driving a Corvette was like his status. But like, that was legit. Worked for me.
Sure.
I'm like, I'd like to make $100,000 and drive a Corvette. So I like started to look at how I could get to New York City and be a trainer there. And it took me like 5 years. And that's literally a whole separate podcast because I went there, interviewed, got the job, and chickened out. Yeah, because I lived in New Jersey.
The podcast is called Success Doesn't Come to Chicken Shits.
Yeah, I chickened out because I lived in New Jersey and I was like about an hour from New York City, but I never went, right? Like I grew up there, but I never went there. Like my family was not like a city. Like we went like twice in my whole life.
Yeah.
So going there was super daunting. Yeah. It was like,
I get it.
Park somewhere, subway, train. It was a thing.
Yeah.
And I go from being this big fish in a small pond. I'm in this little small gym in New Jersey. I'm the bodybuilder guy. I'm the one that knows everything. I go to Equinox in New York City and I'm just like, whoa, it's four floors. It's got like a staircase with like, you could look through the whole, it was everything it was like Disneyland for me, right? Scared, intimidated, but also like I had such a high being in there. And they offered me the job and I couldn't believe it, but I knew that I would have to now get like real certifications. Like I had one, but I'd have to really learn all this stuff. And that was a little intimidating. And then I knew I'd be the new dude and then I'd have to commute an hour and a half. And then I just started letting my doubts. I have this expression that I love. It's called don't take advice from your doubts. Right.
I love that. Yeah.
And I started to do that. I started to let all my fears kick in. My girlfriend's not, I'm not going to see my girlfriend that much. That's not going to be good. It's going to cost me $30 a day to get here. I'm going to be the new guy. Where am I going to park? Maybe I could just get more clients at my current thing and not have to do this commute. Like I just literally talked myself out of it.
Yeah.
And convinced myself that that was the responsible thing to do. And I believed it for a while.
Yeah.
And then like 4 years later, I went back and actually got a job in the city. Right. So that was a big lesson.
Yeah.
Like, don't be a wuss. And when I finally went back and got the job, I spent the first 6 months in self-doubt. Same thing. It would cost me $30 a day to get there. I made like $15 a session. So I'd lose money. And I was afraid to walk the floor and meet people. I loved training people, but I hated the cold calling aspect of it. So I would just train a client if they gave it to me, then I'd go sit at the deli across the street and eat and like sit there wondering why I don't have any business. And then like 6 months in, my manager pulls me aside. He says, "Hey, bro," I'm like, "What's up?" He's like, "I'm pretty disappointed in where you're at." And I was like, now granted, Jess, this is again, most sports I played, most school I did, I was always pretty good.
Yeah.
I usually was getting my conversations were usually, "You're doing a great job. Awesome job. You're going to win MVP this year." Like that's what I usually hear. I got my manager telling me he's disappointed. That's like the same as the guy telling me get the fuck out of the gym, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "You're a really good trainer. You should be busy now. You are slow because you are not selling. You got to get on the floor and sell." So that was like, ah, like I have to do this really uncomfortable thing to be able to do what I love. What I want to do is train 10 people a day, all day. I don't want to go sell myself, but I can't get there if I don't just be uncomfortable for a couple months.
Yeah.
So I finally did it. And I kept looking at this one guy who was ultra successful there. And I thought, if he could do it, I could do it, right? Like, I don't want to do it and I'm kicking and screaming, but I know I can if I just do what he did, you know? So those were pretty powerful times. Like when I think about them now, when I tell the story, you kind of gloss over those in your memory.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember sitting there really, really buried in self-doubt, wondering if this is what I should be doing.
And in retrospect, it's truly almost hilarious to hear you say that.
Right. Yeah, it is.
But
I literally forgot half of this.
Yeah, in the moment, it does not feel hilarious at all. It feels so intimidating and so discouraging. And
well, and I think all of these success stories are super cool when they're told backwards.
Yeah.
But when you're in them, you don't actually know the ending is coming.
Right.
So it's not enjoyable.
Right.
It's when you tell it, it's like, "Oh yeah, I was looking in my car for quarters to pay for my kid's dance class." Like that sounds really epic. It's not fucking epic. It's not epic when you don't know that in 3 years you're going to be fine. It's terrible feeling.
Yeah.
You know, it's terrible when you're sitting in the diner across the street from the gym and you have one client that it costs you $30 to come make 15 and you don't know if you've made a decision that's the absolute worst ever. Right?
Yeah.
It's a really funny, cool story on a podcast 30 years later, but it sucks when you're actually in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many people that are in it. So I hope every single person that's in it is listening to this.
Yeah. You just got to get, you see, I mean, yeah, it's hard to even say what I think the takeaway from that part is like the willingness to do to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right. And I didn't want to do that. I kept looking for ways to stay comfortable. I was comfortable at my little gym in New Jersey. So New York was really uncomfortable. So I just went back to being comfortable. Then I got to New York. But now of that option, once I'm here, it's more comfortable to sit in the deli and stare across the street and write down my ideas than actually go talk to people.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Ideas are easy. Everybody has, you know how many people have told me they're going to start a podcast? I can't even tell you. Everybody.
Yeah.
You know how many people actually have one that's more than 5 episodes long? A handful.
Yeah.
So the ideas are great. You got to have them. But ideas are, you know, somebody told me they have a big bowl at their business that's called the Good Idea Bowl. Put your good ideas in there because you actually have to do things to make things happen. Ideas are like meaningless while they're in that bowl, right?
Yeah.
And that was kind of it. I kept convincing myself that I sat here and wrote up ideas of my to-do list was like this big, like, dude, go fucking talk to people.
Yeah.
Make a sale, get a client.
Your list isn't making you the $30.
No, it's procrastinating what I actually have to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we go to great lengths to get around, like, literally all I had to do was walk the floor, introduce myself and cold call. And it was uncomfortable and awkward and it sucked. I was literally almost going to like go back to New Jersey, find a different gym, start my own gym, like do all these things just to avoid having uncomfortable conversation. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it is. It doesn't feel that way in the moment, but it is.
No, it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof. Yeah. Yes, it makes total sense in the moment when you're telling yourself, like, this is the way to protect my vulnerable ego.
Exactly.
In this moment.
We're really good at like selling ourselves on that stuff.
Yeah, we are.
You know, and we're really good at rationalizing things and justifying things. Super good, right?
Yes, we are.
Right.
Yes, yes. But you did. You got out of your comfort zone.
So I got out of it. Became really successful there. I really enjoyed it. I just literally trained people all day for I think 5 years. Just that's it. So I get it. And I had no. I didn't want to manage. I didn't want to teach sales. Like I got offered all these things to move up and I just didn't want to. I just loved the one-on-one. I had such a wide variety of people and the date. Like I would go from an executive to an athlete, to a model, to a normal person to like, and it was just great. Cool. I just found people to be so interesting and it was super rewarding.
Yeah,
I made really good money. I was able to ultimately move into New York City. So I had a little apartment in New York and it was great. And then I met my wife, Kristen, and when I met her is when I realized, like, I got to now figure out, I love my job, but my job is I'm trading dollars for hours, and my hours suck. You know, I start at 6 a.m. or 5. I work till 6 or 7. I have to go to bed at 9. I have to get up at 4. Yep. And I can't get up like 15 minutes before my first client and just roll in. It's not like I'm doing computer work. I got to be showered and up and like ready to roll. I got to be eating. I got to have food. So for the first like 3 months we dated, I don't think she even thought I liked her because I'd go home every night at like 9. She'd be like, you know, we'd have dinner together. I'm like, I got to go. She's like, you don't want to come over. You don't want to hang out. I'm like, I got to get up.
Yeah.
She's like, oh my God, you freaking loser. You know, but like, I just knew how miserable I was if I didn't sleep and wasn't ready for my day.
Yeah.
But I'm like, if we ever going to have a relationship or especially ever have children, I can't do it. Like, what am I going to do? Yeah. So that's when I first started realizing I got to now I'm comfortable with this job, but I have to learn how to open a business, hire people. Like, I don't know what, but I got to do something to leverage now my time better.
Yeah.
So I started learning how to do a gym, but like I was in New York City. I literally bought, you know, business plans for dummies. Like I had no idea. And fortunately, my brother-in-law, so my wife's sister's husband, retired early with some money, moved to Florida, and he wanted to invest and just find ways to make his money grow. And he was not a fitness guy like a coach, but just a guy that liked to work out. And the idea of a fitness franchise came across his plate. One of his personal trainers asked him if he'd like to invest. So he called me and he said, do you know anything about this fitness franchise? And I didn't. But I said, I'll look at it. I said, it looks kind of cool. He goes, well, I'm thinking about buying a couple franchises. Would you be interested in moving down here and running them for me?
Nice.
And I was like, hell yeah. I mean, yeah. Move to Florida and like have an ownership. But like, Jess, this is like in college, I didn't take a single course that would have any relationship to my future life. No business, no accounting, no marketing, no anything to do with anything that I do now, none of it. So he literally showed me the pro forma statement of another location. Okay, so this is a location in Florida that has this franchise. This is their pro forma. This is their expected year 1, 2, and 3. This is not even real numbers. This is what we think we're going to do.
Right.
$500,000 was like the top line. Top line. I don't know what I'm looking at. All I see is $500,000.
Yes.
I literally think he and I are going to make $500,000 in year three, which means even if I'm a 20% owner, that's pretty good. I'm in. Well, again, later I find out that's top line. Yeah. Bottom line is very different. Bottom line's probably 15% of that. And then I am a 20% of that. So my number is like this.
Yeah.
That didn't really occur to me until it was actually happening.
Yeah.
So now my wife and I are in Florida. We're having a baby. She's left her really good job and career. I've left mine. We partner with him in this studio, and I learn a ton because I don't know how to run a business. I don't know anything about anything. So a franchise was great because all that.
You either win or you learn.
Totally. Yeah. Right. So I learned a lot about running. I went out to the franchise school. I learned a whole bunch about running a business. I found that I actually liked having a team. I liked being like a boss, whatever, a leader. I don't like the word boss. I like the word boss when we refer to you like a boss, but not like I'm someone's boss. Right. But like, it was cool. Like I enjoyed it, but like we didn't really make any money. The numbers just didn't work as prescribed. They didn't work in Miami. They didn't work because it was 2007, 2008, the economy crashed. So like none of the math worked. So my life sucked. Like I was insanely stressed about trying to make $35,000 pay for a life in Miami, which it doesn't do. But I loved being like the face of a business. I love being the guy, right? So I kind of got addicted to that.
Yeah.
But I like hated my day-to-day life and the stress of how can I make more money? Like, how do I make these numbers work? Because they just didn't. It was like the model was charge $70 a session, pay the coach $16. Real life was we can only charge $58 because nobody's paying $70. No fucking trainer is working for $15. We got to pay them $20. Okay, those margins are much different. Oh, plus the pro forma was for a place that cost $15 a square foot. In Miami, it cost $25 a square foot. Yeah. So there was no, it didn't work. Yeah. It was just, again, it's just financial literacy. This math doesn't work.
Yes.
And there's not really a way to make it work. It wasn't a volume thing. At some level, yes, it would work, but it just didn't work. So we decided that we don't want to live in Florida anymore. And we want to get out of this, but this is my brother-in-law who I love and we're invested in.
Yeah.
So we have to have this like terrible conversation where we're like, dude, we don't want to live here anymore.
Yeah.
And that was horrible. And he was like, I respect that. I can't run this business without you or won't because I can't just hire another you. And he's not a fitness guy. He's just a business guy.
Right.
So he's like, if we can get this thing to a point and sell it, then, you know, I'll shut down the other ones and like go. So, you know, we spent a year and a half, 2 years building it up to the point where someone would buy it. We sold it. We got a little bit of money and we moved to Maine. So that was kind of our like, you know, like next level of life, I guess.
And you picked Maine because?
Just, it was kind of random. We just honestly missed, because where are you? You're in Atlanta?
Yep.
So I just missed winter time. Like Florida was great, but I missed seasons. Like I missed Christmas being covered in snow. I miss Thanksgiving being cold. It was just weird to be like shorts and flip flops year round.
Yeah.
So we just wanted seasons and a little more family friendly life than the city of Miami. Right. So we just started looking from like North Carolina up and the apartment we rented in Miami was owned by someone who lived up here in Maine. And we had established a friendship with her over 5 years living there. So she's like, why don't you guys consider Maine? If you're moving up north, I'm like, that's a little much. That's like really north. That's like Canada. She's like, but just come look at it. It's awesome. So we looked at it,
awesome.
Kind of loved it. And then just were like, great, but what are we going to do for a living? Like we didn't make a lot of money from the sale. It was just enough to like get me to my next job.
Yeah.
It was a franchise that we were a part of in Miami. So I reached out to the parent company, the franchisor. I said, hey, listen, we're selling our locations, but I love the company. And if there are opportunities, you know, consider me, because I thought like a consultant type thing. So sure enough, something opened where I was I forget even the term now, but basically I had like 20 locations that I would just help them, right? So I just get on a phone call with them and help them run their business. So I was like, you know, they're kind of account manager, for lack of a better word. And they were so spaced out. I mean, ideally you'd live in the area where locations were so I could drive and visit them. But they were trying to fill the like Midwest strip. So it was like from Nebraska all the way down. So anywhere you lived, you'd still have to fly.
Yeah.
So I was like, can I live in Maine and take this job? And they were like, I guess for a little while. So that was my job, is I had this safe, like, I got a salary, I got benefits, I didn't have to stress about making payroll, making rent. I loved it for a little while because it was literally like I knew I was getting this much every week. I was getting insurance. I could work from home. So I'd come down here in the basement, make phone calls, talk business. I could take my dog to the park.
You make it sound so glamorous at this point in the story, but like 15 minutes ago, these are all the jobs that you've been turning down. Yeah,
exactly. No, exactly. It was so stressful being a business owner that I now wanted the opposite. I think I told you this when we chatted. I'll never forget this. I drove out of my condo building in Miami, and the guy's name was Lorenzo. Lorenzo was the maintenance man. Lorenzo rode his bicycle to work at 7 in the morning, and he freaking trimmed plants, and he cleaned up the driveway, and he went home at 3:30. And I thought, I want that job or something like that. I don't want all the stress and responsibility.
You know, that's lawn care too, right?
Dude, yeah, really, seriously, like that's what I want. Yeah. So the corporate job kind of was that. Like I wasn't, yeah. I mean, yes, I had I could get a bonus if I performed well and I wanted to do well and I really wanted to help my guys, my team, but I knew that my paycheck was not dependent on me finding clients, me coming up with the next marketing thing, I couldn't think of anything worse than having the responsibility of my own business again.
But
having got out from it, because it was so stressful.
It was so stressful, probably, you know, major burnout.
Yeah.
And what I cannot, you know, we can't move forward without, miss this. In the middle of burnout, you gravitated toward the thing that for your whole life you had been saying, I don't want that. That is not me. That is not the kind of job I find enjoyable. That is not worth the things that I have to give up in order to clock in, clock out. I mean, your entire life up to that point, it sounds like, I mean, while there were stressful things and you had to get outside of your comfort zone, you weren't broken.
Right.
Right. And so in the younger, more vibrant opportunist Scott, who maybe didn't know where he wanted to go, but knew what he didn't want to do, and definitely gravitated toward the things that fit you as a person. Now, after this really stressful season in life where the walls feel like they're closing in and you hit this place of burnout, it's like all of a sudden you were a different person.
Yeah.
When it came to searching for meaning in a career or the applicability of the job that you're doing.
Totally.
I just think that's
totally.
You're not the only one that's ever experienced that. I know it for certain.
Yeah. And I was completely lost. Yeah. Like that's the other part I want people to understand is like right now, I mean, it varies day to day, but for the most part, I feel pretty happy, secure, confident in like what I'm doing, who I am and what I'm about, right? Like why I'm on this planet.
Yeah.
But like, I still remember when the gym was for sale or even sold, I was at my parents' house and I was going through trying to figure out like of the skill set that I have, how do I leverage this now? Like other than just opening another gym, which I don't want to do.
Yeah.
And I don't even think I can do, like, I don't even know how to do that if it's not the franchise. What do I do? Like, can I start a YouTube channel and get paid to do that? How do people make money on YouTube? Can I do online coaching? Can I get a job for like York Barbell or somebody where I work in a corporate office? But I didn't know. I had literally no anything. I was reaching out to headhunters, like, tell me if any opportunity shows up. I just had absolutely no idea what to do. So the corporate job was like a godsend in that way because it was a career and it was money. We could afford to move and pay for our mortgage.
Right.
But then a few years in, I had another one of these moments where I'm like, what am I doing?
Well, you know? You started waking up, right?
Yeah. And I just, yeah, it just was frustrating because, like, I felt like working for a corporate environment that was so big, my creativity and my ability to make change was stifled, right? So I was just starting to learn the power of, like, video, things like that. So I'd have 20 locations who'd be struggling with XYZ. And it's because they're all following these very corporate blueprint things. And my nature has always been to be a little bit not that guy. So I just record a video rather than having this conversation with 20 people. I'd record a video about what they should do to help. And I'd share it with all of them. And then I'd get in trouble from corporate because I sent out a video and I said, fuck 10 times in it. And it wasn't approved by the corporate office. And I'm like, whatever, dude, I literally had this thought this morning, recorded it and sent it to everybody so they could benefit from it. And then we had a Facebook page for all the owners. And I'd just, like, try to provide value in there. But then that became, that has to be monitored by corporate. And then this, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't live like this, right? I can't be, I'm not that dude. Like I need to move things forward faster than I'm limited with these handcuffs from this corporate office. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I have a Ron Carson, who owns Carson Wealth. I highly respect him. His kind of entrepreneurial mindset is, if it's not broken, break it.
Exactly.
Which I love so much. Yep. The first time I've heard him say it, it just has stuck with me. And I really think that's the entrepreneur banner. And it's different than the corporate world in the sense that corporate is trying to figure out how to protect the things that are working.
Yep.
And that's their whole mentality. And yep. Entrepreneurs are out here like, it ain't broken yet. Let's figure out how to break it and see where it breaks and figure out how to put it back together after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It was just like, it was this weird juxtaposition of, I was like really valuable to the company in some ways, but I was almost like a liability at the same time. Mm-hmm. And, so again, I learned a lot from being on that side of the table. You know, I remember going to the corporate office and I was like, oh, wow, I might as well be in the corporate office of a Subway.
Yeah.
Like it didn't feel fitness. Like I was picturing everybody there would be like me and you. And I went there and like nobody works out and like nobody's wearing fitness clothes and like nobody's talking about working out. They're just business people that happened to be in a fitness franchise. That was just weird to me. You know, my direct boss was also a fitness guy, but like otherwise nobody was. And it just felt strange. Yeah. And then like we do these, I don't know. It was just like, again, this is not aligning with like me as a human, you know? So I'm almost there, but this ain't it either. Right. Like it's another like, shit, damn, I thought this was it. But it's not it, you know? And
I gotta get outside my comfort zone again.
Yeah, man. Like I thought I was done. So my next like moment was sitting at my computer. I think, you know, my whole day would be sitting here just, you know, writing emails and running numbers and things that made my brain hurt. And because I'm just not good at that stuff. You know, even now as a business person, I'm not good at that.
Doesn't
you know, what I'm good at is
it still makes
I'm good better. At I'm good at certain things. Right. But I'm not. There's a lot of things I'm not good at. So I'm getting better at delegating all those. I find people that are good at it. But I was doing a lot of the stuff that is painful for me, you know. And then an old client of mine from New York City. So this is like 20 years out. He just messaged me on Facebook out of nowhere. And I don't talk to him a lot. You know, we're friends, but not like I didn't see his stuff a lot. He just said, hey, I was having a conversation with somebody about you today. I thought of you. And so his name was BJ, and BJ was gay, right? And I worked in New York City was I worked in the West Village. So a huge percentage of the clientele was gay. And he knew I was straight and he was a little apprehensive. And this was also 20, 30 years ago. So it's a very different cultural acceptance of that, right?
Yeah.
So in that area of town, it was super like, well, I understood that most people were gay,
okay,
but he still felt a little weird that like, I'm a straight trainer and he felt nervous about asking me to help him because he didn't know how I would act around him. Like if I was going to be like, fuck out of here, I was going to be cool. So, of course I was cool. And like, I loved him and we had this really, really awesome relationship and I didn't think twice about it. But when he wrote me later, he said, I just wanted to say thank you for A, you know, teaching me so much about lifting and weight training and so forth, but also like just welcoming me as a human and making me feel comfortable with, you know, a different sexuality than you or whatever. And I was like, wow. And he said, and I also want to say, I just hope you're still doing this because like, that's what you're on this planet to do.
I'm so excited to come back and finish out this conversation with Scott. The way his story comes together as a result of his tenacity and passion is an inspiration to anyone out there that is feeling so tired of having to start over again and again. Stay tuned for the release of the finale in the coming weeks. And in the meantime, you know what to do. Go lift heavy and be kind.